You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 28 October. Baldwin results due later today. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Pete Leratenhuis, Hernia Capital Advisors. Way back in Jane, we asked him about two stocks he liked, Pick and Pay and Sasol. I want to catch up on the Pick and Pay. Ernest North from Naked Insurance, importance of car insurance in protecting your finances. And then we're going to be chatting with RMB on their report on where to invest into the African continent. Podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. FirstRand takes stake in AI fintech Optasia. The Dubai-based company operating in 38 countries and currently IPO, listing next week. Business Day, Chery considers SA factories amid rising demand. Chinese vehicle maker is conducting feasibility studies as its brands, including Omoda and Jaecoo, gain traction. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 1.25%, NASDAQ 1.8% higher. The East is red, Tokyo down 0.1%, as is Sydney, as is Hong Kong, and Tencent down 1.1%. Commodities, also red. We've got gold futures at $4,003, Brent $65.65, platinum $1,571, and palladium $1,433. The rand is 17.22, Bitcoin 113,900, and top 40 opening call, 5 points to the green. We can call that flat.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petri Radenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the early morning. Way back in January, we were chatting on the show, picking some stocks for the year. You picked Sasol. You also picked Pick and Pay. Pick and Pay kind of sideways as I'm looking at a year-to-date chart. You still liking Pick and Pay results yesterday? I mean, essentially, still loss-making, but perhaps what's more important, if you buy Pick and Pay, you're effectively just getting Boxer and then Pick and Pay for free and some cash on the side.
Good morning, Simon. And essentially, yes. So it's actually, I mean, it was looking like it was going to go kind of flat for the year because January was still a little bit higher than what it is now. And obviously the results yesterday, the market didn't enjoy too much, 6.3% lower. But as you rightfully say, the loss that they're making is smaller. They lost $439 million, which is less than the $804 million they lost last year. Turnover is growing. You know, net trading profit or trading profit has increased to $310 million from $83 million. Overall turnover is up something like 5%. Mm-hmm. So there's still a lot of trouble, I suppose, but we are seeing that the situation is improving. So the turnaround strategy is working, and the situation is getting better. There's a bit of a slowdown in the clothing segment, the Pick and Pay clothing segment, but still that's growing at around 12%, which is slower than it has been, but still positive. And online sales up by something like 34% or 35%, somewhere around there, right? So overall, it seems as though they're stabilizing, if you will, from a market share perspective as well. And if they continue along this route that they are, they'll eventually get to a point where they're once again profitable. So I think that if you are a long-term holder, you're probably still okay to hold on. One could argue that there are, you know, better choices in the market.
Sure, I mean, we could always argue that.
Yeah. So where do you deploy your capital is really like the real question. Pick and Pay hasn't worked out as well as we'd hoped it would. However, you know, there are signs that it's going to at least recover from here. And I think if we get back to this point of profitability, it'll do pretty well. I suppose the question we have to really figure out, and you know, something I don't have the answer to this morning, is there a better option to deploy capital into in this sector elsewhere on the market?
And I take your point on that. It's an interesting question because it's not just always I can buy this. It's what else could I do? We have a finite amount of money. We're not, I don't know, Bill Gates, Patrice Motsepe with absolute pools of it. So it is always a case of where else could we go with it? I like that thinking. I quickly want to get your view because the second stock that you were liking at the beginning of the year was Sasol. It's been a wild ride, but looking at the chart after the lows in April, which must have been quite nerve-wracking, it's doubled off those lows, and the Sasol chart looking actually quite nice and strong.
Yeah, so the play on Sasol was a bit of an early entrance, I suppose, at the beginning of the year. April wasn't looking too good, but subsequently it's managed to make higher highs and higher lows. And even now, recently, when it traded down to, I think on Twitter I said, look, at 102 Rand, consider buying it again if you're a seller at 126. And it dipped all the way down to like 94, 93, right? But it managed to bounce up 111 at the moment. If we can get above 127, I think 137, 137 is a target. But again, this is just the beginning of what we think is an upward trend, right?
So, yeah.
Our investment case here is to be invested in Sasol for a number of years still.
Yeah.
So we expect it to go considerably higher. And we think that, you know, this is a theme I think everybody who listens to me at any point is very familiar with: energy, right?
Yeah.
So that energy theme is very, very strongly expressed. And the best way, one of the better ways for us to play it in the South African market is through Sasol.
Yeah, I get your point in that. And I mean, the chart looking nice and a forward PE of just over 4. No dividend, but at some point, I suppose, the dividend comes back. They need to get rid of some of that debt first. Pickley Radenhaus here in your Capital Advisors. Appreciate the early morning time. And our poll today is on Pick and Pay. Essentially, I mean, you buy Pick and Pay, you're getting Boxer and the rest of the business. You're getting Boxer and then the rest of Pick and Pay is free. We're asking you, is there value here? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Ernest North, co-founder of Naked. Ernest, appreciate the early morning time. Car insurance. I mean, the one thing I've always had, certainly a third party, I've always been worried I would crash into a Lamborghini or something like that. But let's touch on sort of more broad insurance. I mean, if you're in an accident and it's your fault, the cost is for your account, not just to your vehicle, but obviously the other vehicles out there. And if you're insured, that's where the insurance steps in. It's if you're not insured that things can get really, really messy if you've caused an accident.
Hi, Simon. Yes, it's nice to be chatting again. I think the interesting thing for me is that we notice a lot of people assuming wrongly that this issue of who was at fault is a very easy, clear-cut one. In practice, proving that one party alone was at fault is often very difficult. And so what that means is two things. The number one is if your car is damaged, proving that the other party alone was at fault is very tricky. And so rather be insured and not have to worry about proving who was at fault. Because even if you were at fault, if you're insured, unless you were breaking the law deliberately, your insurer will repair your car. And so the first reason to be insured is to say, if you were partially at fault or you were maybe a little bit slow in pressing the brakes or whatever, that's not an issue because your car will be repaired. That's why your insurer is there. That's the first benefit. But the second reason why we see it in being an issue if people are confused by this issue of who is at fault is, in practice, if the other party was not insured, proving that they were, in fact, at fault is harder than you think. And so being liable for damage to their car happens easier than you think. And, and so if that car is expensive and you were not insured, their insurer will most likely insist that you pay for a portion of the damage. And if you're not insured for third-party liability cover, then you will have to pay for that out of your own pocket.
And therein comes the risk. There's also the risk. I mean, if I'm not insured and the accident is, and let's say we can quantifiably say that it was 100% not my fault, but if I'm not insured and the other party isn't insured, now I'm really in a pickle, because even the point is, if I've got insurance, it can step in if the other party is not insured. And that is perhaps the risk, because I suspect there are a lot of cars on our roads that aren't insured.
Exactly. That's the point. The scary thing is that if you look around you at the 10 cars standing next to you at the traffic light, mm-hmm. probably 6 or 7 of out of 10 cars mm-hmm. Are not insured.
Wow.
It's a scary statistic in South Africa that so many people are driving around with insurance. And it really does impact you as a risk, as a person that is insured, because it means that in a accident scenario, mm-hmm. the likelihood of you being able to recover the damages from the other party, if, as you say, you were definitely not at
yeah.
fault, it was 100% their fault, the likelihood of you recovering the damages is very low if they were not insured, because dealing with a private individual, in practice, it's almost impossible to get money out of them. Sure, if they are insured, you can get that money from mm-hmm. their insurer. But in practice, most often, you don't get that money if they are not insured. And so rather, don't worry about the issue of whose fault it was. Just let your own insurer fix your car and get on with your life.
In that sense, it is very much that peace of mind, knowing that, you know, for a monthly fee. And I mean, it really is a case of, yeah, you pay some money every month. It gives you that peace of mind, regardless what the circumstances are. There's also that distinction between third party and comprehensive. As I understand, comprehensive is alles. It's all in. The third party is, I'm insuring the Lamborghini I might hit by mistake.
Exactly. And I think that the buying third party only cover is something that is sensible for people that are driving an older car that is typically not worth a lot.
Mm.
And if you were to be in a little accident or a little scratch and your car would be damaged a little bit, it wouldn't be the end of the world. You wouldn't sort of have long tears about it, and you wouldn't worry about necessarily fixing it straight away. In that case, I can understand not paying the 300 or 500 rand for insuring that car every month. But if that car is in an accident where a Lamborghini is damaged
mm-hmm.
and you are held liable for at least a portion, let's mm-hmm. say 20% of the damage of fixing that 5 million rand car, the other insurer will come after you and they will make you pay on a monthly basis indefinitely until you've paid that debt. So that is not worth it. And so for something small like 100 bucks a month, you can insure yourself only for that risk that the other car is damaged and mm-hmm. you were partially at fault. And what the insurer then says is, we take away all your liability.
Yeah.
We take on your legal responsibility
yeah.
for only 100 bucks a month.
And there is, folks looking at insurance, and yeah, there are ways to manage the monthly premium. I can push my excess up, and you need to make sure that you're fully appreciative of what that excess is. I can take out some of the bells and whistles. I think many of the insurers will say, you know, do you want a higher car in case? There are ways I can carefully sort of manage my premium so that it's perhaps not too onerous, and I can still have the insurance, either a third party or even a comprehensive.
Spot on. I think the two most significant bells and whistles that are worth evaluating on an ongoing basis,
mm-hmm.
and it's easy to do on an app, you just decide which cover you want and you see your premium changing, is whether you want a car hire, and particularly whether you want a fancy car, whether you want a small car or no car at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes a difference of between 100 and 300 rand a month, so make that choice. And then the second one is the shortfall cover. So typically
yeah.
in the early stage of your loan, if you're financing the car, there's a difference between what your insurance is likely to pay out and what your loan is at that point if the car were to be written off. And so typically there's a shortfall in the first year or two of your loan. So it's very responsible to have that shortfall cover. But many people forget to turn off that cover after a year or two, when in fact that shortfall doesn't exist anymore. So that's another 80 or 100 bucks that you can turn off once you don't need it. So definitely manage your insurance. But you're right, the best way to control your premium is to pick your excess. If you pick a higher excess, your premium goes down. Of course, make sure that you have that money. Yeah, make sure that you're not picking an unrealistic amount. Because if an accident happened, you want to pay the excess quickly so that your insurer can fix your car and not worry about this, whose fault was it drama. Just fix my car quickly and let's just move on with life. Sure, maybe in some cases you get the excess back, but don't budget on that. Pick an excess that is reasonable within your budget. But yes, it is the picking an excess and managing your premium and making seeing your premium go up or down through which excess you choose is a really wise thing to do on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I mean, I've tweaked that excess number and it does make massive differences. We leave it there. Ernest North, co-founder, Naked. Appreciate the early morning. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Joining now with us, I'm Lunga. He is Chief Economist, RMB, the 2025-26 RMB Where to Invest in Africa publication came out yesterday. As I appreciate the time, 31 African nations, which is about 90% of the GDP, 83% odd of the population, looking at things such as economic performance potential, market accessibility. If we look at the countries at the top, Seychelles, Mauritius, Egypt, South Africa, Morocco, Ghana, the top six, all unchanged, which in a sense tells me that they are continuing to do a lot that is right and perhaps getting some windfalls, but no change at the top, which I suppose for those countries is really good news for them. And kudos to the politicians, but the economy and the more broadly as well.
Indeed. But there are a lot of underlying changes in the variables that go into the index. But also, if you look at some of the countries, they have also experienced some big changes. If you take Nigeria, for instance, moving 9 points lower from being ranked 9 in 2024-2025 to being ranked 18th in the 2025-2026 edition, there's a lot of context into that movement. In particular, the devaluation when the parallel Nairas were collapsed into one, which is the right reform to actually do. And then the second one, which is the restatement of Nigeria's economic statistics, which is typically done once every 5 years, the global standard, which found out the economy is much bigger than what it used to. Nonetheless, the devaluation was much more bigger than the restatement of the economic statistics. So it ended up with the economy that is much lower when measured in dollar terms. Gotcha. That is why Nigeria has declined. So it's declining for the right reasons. So that is not necessarily a negative.
That's a good point. I like that, because the flip side is Mozambique, which has got that huge natural gas discovery, which in one sense should be really, really good for the economy. But of course, conflict has been rearing its head and that is seeing it also fall because of the internal conflict. There are two sides to that equation. The gas is great, but the conflict is not helping by any stretch.
Indeed, falling 5 points from being ranked 23 to being ranked 28, a lot of that social conflict. They also had difficulties in getting FX reserves. Mm-hmm. All of that impacted on market liquidity, and overall, it just dragged Mozambique's ranking. But you also have another good performer, that is Cote d'Ivoire.
Yeah.
Moving 8 points, from being ranked number 16 to being ranked number 8. They have been doing quite a good set of economic reforms, and economic growth has been quite good, which sees it lift from 1 year to the next. But if you just look at how the methodology is structured or the model works, it's meant to be quite stable from year to year, which means if you see this sort of movements, it's something that is very drastic that has been done.
Yeah, so something really happening. And to your point, Cote d'Ivoire, absolutely moving in the right direction. I got to say, the one slide that really jumped out at me, and I spent an age at it, you call it the untapped export potential. South Africa was firmly at the top up there with huge potential. What are you? How are you measuring the untapped export potential?
So this is, the amount of potential demand from countries that we are currently not exporting goods.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, they import goods from other countries, of which those goods we also produce locally, which mm-hmm. means we have an available market that we are not yet selling, which is why in the recent couple of days, we have seen the president in East Asia going to the likes of Malaysia and other countries. Those are countries that we are not yet exporting to a large extent, but they do import goods that we produce in the country. So $75 billion worth of untapped potential for South Africa is the largest, which means we do have the opportunity to deepen trade with those countries. That's where our diplomatic missions should continue to visit and try to create new trade routes for our products. In addition to the export model, we have a currency model essentially that gives us a sense of what's the valuations of currencies, which is something that you're not going to mm-hmm. find in any other book, which means this really provides insights for investors to make sure that they have a good understanding of the risk they face before they go into a particular country to invest.
Yeah, it's a chunky report, 160-odd pages, but well worth spending the time on it. It is fascinating, particularly if you, like me, love some bits of data. There are tons of data points here. Simon Khlangu, Chief Economist, RMB, appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We're chatting with Nick Kunze yesterday, Sanlam Private Wealth. Markets looking to rally higher. Oh, we sold off yesterday, but the rest of the world did not. We are seeing all-time highs left, right, and centre. And we asked if you are bullish global markets. Just over half said yes, onwards and upwards. A third said cautiously. The rest said no, this is madness. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website, the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Trust in trading.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.